Poncho Sanchez and Bongo Santa Maria team up on their congas for Conga Blue. This is the title track of Sanchez's 1996 album. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And somebody remarked to me today, why is everything going so crazy all at the same time? So it's America. This is how it works. You have to be prepared that everything crazy would happen at the same time. Today we'll be talking about race and the race for the White House. Candidates are quick to swear allegiance to communities of color. But which of these candidates can deliver? That's the question. Racism, as you know, has been and continues to be a permanent thread in the fabric of American life. It's a subject carefully managed in our society so as to create the illusion that a few eruptions aside, America has all but succeeded in bringing its deep racial divides under control. The 2020 presidential election has disavowed us of that notion as communities of color ask candidates that familiar question. What are you going to do for us? What can we expect in exchange for our votes? That's the question. We've gone down quite a road here, starting with the Trump trial. And we bumped into the current event, which is people are looking at the presidential campaigns. And already we've seen quite a few signals of the candidates and their supporters or would-be supporters looking at this matter of race. To what degree do you see it as being a major factor in the presidential campaign? To what degree do you see it being exploited by either the candidates and their parties or the people who are expected to vote? How is it playing out this time around? That's the question that we are contemplating today. At 888-874-4888, let's hear what your observations are on the matter of race and the race for the White House. Jay, you're on the air. You're getting us started today.
Yes. Good afternoon, Eutrice. How are you today?
Okay. I'm hanging. How are you?
I'm good. Listen, I wish we would just stop playing games with this whole situation. None of these candidates have a history or any honest relationship with the black community or other communities of color. They're not going to do anything for the black community or other colors, communities of color, other than pander to them to try and get their vote and say that they're going to do this and they're going to do that. And the reality is they're going to do nothing. Prime example, Bloomberg, pandering at the highest level that I've ever seen. He's done more harm to the black community than he's ever done good for the black community. Now, you may say that he's done programs, but when you weigh it against the other things that he's does, it's of no value, if the truth be told. Then you have someone like Biden, who just blatantly has a history of doing things, when you look at it on a whole, is harmful to the black community. Now he's pandering to the black community. The sad thing in all of this is, the real problem is the black community for not knowing how to pick and choose what is best for them, for allowing people like Biden, Bloomberg, and the rest of them to pander to us so that supposedly we get something in return. And if you search it from the beginning of our enslavement in this country, that's how we've been treated. And we've never gotten nothing in return. So to allow someone to continuously abuse you, you basically showing that you got a Stockholm syndrome going on within you as a group. And unfortunately, we're not going to get out of it. So we're going to allow people like Biden and the rest of them to pander to us, tell us that they're going to do this and they're going to do that, and we're going to be in the same fix come tomorrow and the day after. That's just the reality.
Well, got us started today with some sober thoughts. Thanks, Jay, for calling in. Patricia, you're on the air. How are you?
Good afternoon, Eutrice. Good afternoon to the PRN family. And I'm so happy to hear that you are doing well.
I'm hanging in.
Honey, we don't have any other choice.
I'm not going to go easily.
Eutrice, I am absolutely disgusted. And let me share with you why. As you know, people without information have no direction, no guidance, no ability to make a decision that is based on the evidence. And so I do the best that I can to educate folks. And so I, this past Sunday, as I usually do, I called in to Reverend Sharpton's show. And I started to talk about the fact that while everybody focuses on Trump, the emphasis is not placed on the DNC and what the DNC is doing or not doing. And I started to talk about the fact that the rules to allow Michael Bloomberg to appear in the debates were changed, even though when Julian Castro and Cory Booker appealed, there was no empathy and no ability to change the rules. But all of a sudden, Michael Bloomberg comes along with his millions and billions, and the rules are changed. And I want you to know that Reverend Sharpton stopped me the minute I said that and said that I was misinformed. He said that the rules had, he said, Reverend Sharpton said to me and the rest of Black America that listened to his show on Sunday that the rules were not changed. And he twisted the argument. And I then heard Perez get on the airways and say that, in fact, the rules had not been changed. And then I don't know if people are aware that they have now initiated a 24-hour news cycle for Black America that's hosted by Ben Chavis and I forget who the other person is. But, you know, I don't know how else to say that Black America is being pimped in a way that is so blatant like I have never, ever, ever seen. It is out of the woodwork. If you look at those Bloomberg ads, you've got Jeffrey Canada, who did absolutely nothing here in New York. Without accurate information, we are at a loss to make an informed decision. And that's what we're supposed to be making, informed decisions based on information, credible, accurate information. And that is lacking. As a matter of fact, it has now been reduced to lies. I could not believe that he told me that the rules had not been changed, but he said it.
How do you think, I mean, you've pretty much given us quite a hint as to how you think this would all turn out, but I need to hear you say it. How do you think this would all turn out?
You know, do whatever you got to do. Say whatever you got to say to get Black folks to come. Then even when they do that, they're not even talking about with anything with specificity. police reform, what does that mean? What does that mean? You know, so it's these general terms that lack specificity, and everybody's saying, okay. It's called pandering. And they're not even doing a very good job of the pandering. Not in my
Now, judgment. Is this the candidates or is this the party?
It's everybody. And it starts with the party. It's the party and the candidates and those people who call themselves activists. They're all in cahoots.
I wish you would tell us a little bit more about the activist part.
Okay, so last night I saw that black elected officials, at least one here in New York, Gregory Meeks, but other black elected officials around the country are now beginning to come out for Michael Bloomberg with all of these laudable things that he never did. Never. When I saw that, I said, wait a minute, are we both living in the same New York City? I mean, Jeff, if you could have seen what Greg Meeks said about all the laudable things that Bloomberg said, I said, wait a minute, I was here. I don't remember that. They're twisting. They're not even twisting. They're outright lying to black people. They're outright lying to black people. I mean, how awful. I mean, that's our existence, perpetuating lies. And if you tell the lie often enough, people begin to believe it's the truth.
It's not a very good picture that you paint.
It's a horrible picture.
If it is, as you say, is there any chance that that could be some kind of a reversal before the general election?
I don't see it, because that's the very reason they have initiated this 24-hour news cycle specifically for black folks. You know, who was it that said, in the art of war, the first rule of war is control of communication? And that's what this is. Control the communication and information. Isn't that what they did when they invaded Grenada with Maurice Bishop? They cut off the communication.
You're giving us quite a lesson here today, Patricia, and we need to hear it. And that's why we need to discuss these things out in the open. It does not need to be hidden at all. It needs to be out in the open because, as you know, the story, or as the word is used now, the narrative is quite different. We heard Biden talk about, you know, his long-standing connections with the African-American community and the Latino community. Everybody suddenly has a long list of things that they can recite about how close they are to the community. But curiously, I haven't heard one of them talk about what it is that they have been told from these same communities as to what the number one priority is and how they're going to fix that. They just talk.
You know, I heard, you know, when you listen to Buttigieg and they ask him, he responds in generalities. You know, he has this air about him. I don't even know what to say anymore. Because he is so articulate, he's able to gloss over and make people feel as though his intellectual capability is sufficient to address our situation and our condition. No, intellectual stuff doesn't help me when you're shooting me in my back. I'm dead. And they somehow are able to trape out people after people to say, oh, he's not a bad guy. He's not who you think he is. Well, he is who you think he is. They cannot point to one person in his cabinet over years in leadership, black or brown. Ask him to identify anybody. The one person who was the police commander, gone. None of them have a history with the black community, even though now they're trying to purport themselves as having a relationship to the black and brown community. None of them have had. But now you have all of these black elected officials and activists jumping on the bandwagon to say, oh, yeah, 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 he does, or he did. And he's a good guy. Wow.
Well, it's a good thing we're raising the question here, because I haven't heard it raised yet.
And you're not going to.
I know very well. But it still must be raised. And we should point it out. And we should do more than that.
Well,
we don't seem to have a plan or a tactic or even an idea of how we could counter this repeated act of aggression against our communities.
It is an assault. It is a war on black and brown people. And that's what this 24-hour news cycle is designed to do. Just control your mind over and over and over again. A 24-hour news cycle of misinformation. I mean, this could very well be the Carter G. Woodson misinformation of the Negro.
Misinformation. Thank you so much, Patricia, for your very thoughtful opinion. Thank you so much. Ma'at from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, greetings, beloved.
Thank you.
I have to agree with much of what both Jay and Patricia had to say. And one of the things that's not coming out around Bloomberg, because he says he wants to make it up, well, people got robbed. I think about the grandmother that happened to come on Democracy Now. She had, you know how black folks a lot of times don't have checking accounts. And she had loads of cash to pay her bills, got into a stop and frisk, and got robbed. And you have to, that's one that we heard about. You have to multiply that many, many times, including probably some good cannabis. But one of the things that's also not being mentioned in this discussion is extending what Clara had to say yesterday in terms of what I call a type of statelessness that we need to feel as a form of grace and look at, because as Clara so well put it, this is fascism coming down, and nobody's talking about how far. For example, what's his face, Jeff Sessions, he rolled back all consent decrees, which, although baby steps were crucial, Ferguson brought out a whole municipal court system of infractions that weren't even infractions, sitting in your car in your own driveway, and a debt prison that would just, I mean, it just goes on and on. So is that 50 years that we're set back? So nobody's looking at whether it's situation around ICE now that can destroy the deaths because of lack of medical care and with children and adults, and those records are likely to be destroyed in 3 years now. And all these things that have put us back, I mean, we haven't even put a number on it, 50 years around the consent decrees maybe, and on and on.
But why, therefore, are people who, many of whom are very much aware of these things, continuing to support the Democratic Party?
Well, I guess it has in part to do, this is how I look at it, Adam Clayton Powell Jr., he said, what's in your hand? So we look at Alexandria, Ocasio-Cortez,
yeah.
The squad, And by the way, a couple of days ago, they did a program called, sponsored by the Rising Majority, I think it's called, and Nameen Sheikh, co-producer, host with Amy, they did a program, and they had some very powerful thoughts. So at least with the Democratic Party, you have more people anchored in right and truth and speaking to the real issues. And we know all the old white men. I mean, they don't even have hardly a handful of white women. Okay, so we know how they look and what their whole agenda is. So, you know, I said, what's in our hand? You know, because if we get to the point where we're so cynical and we see no hope, then we're going to lose a lot of the young people, I would say.
Well, it is a clarion call. Time is running out. And if nothing motivates people to really get excited about their own interests, I don't know what else to say. We really have to get people energized about their own interests. Thank you so much for contributing today, Ma'at.
Thank you.
Everlasting from Alabama. You're on the air.
Hi, Teresa. How are you doing?
Okay. How are you?
That's great. I'm fine. Well, you, Teresa, here's the thing. When we're dealing with what are these politicians and stuff going to do for specifically for the black community? We have to start doing for ourselves. We have the resources. We can pool our resources together. Why do we always wait on someone else who has no interest in us whatsoever? You're talking about billionaires and people have what? How can they relate to an average working person or a person that doesn't have a job? They can't relate at all. All they're doing is just promising this and putting them year after year after year after year. I'm not saying don't vote. I'm not saying we can't be not to be interested because we have to be interested in that as well because it's our tax money and we're a part of the system. However, these men have shown that they are not going to do anything specifically for us, and we keep putting these people, whether it's Buttigieg, whether it's Biden, whether it's Alcantara, all these people, they have no real power. The power differential in this country has not changed from slavery to now. The people, these Europeans, they still own the means of production. They still own the wealth, and that's the problem. The main problem is the power differential. So that's what we have to deal with. If we can't deal with the power differential, all this other stuff about who's voting and a black news station, it doesn't matter because they still have the power. It's one thing I also learned. Also, I used to think that white supremacy, white domination was the number one issue. But then I had to think about it after a while as I started getting more older and more mature. I'm 60 now. I think that's the secondary one. The fact that they have the power to do what they do, that's the main issue because I don't care how racist they were, if we didn't allow them to have the power to do what they do, they wouldn't be able to do it whether they were racist or not. So I know it's a hard thing to look at sometimes, a hard pill to swallow, but at some point, we go like in the community. Me and my son were talking yesterday. So we would say, no, we could start doing it to the community to help them start doing things for ourselves. We have people who could start taking some elderly people to their doctor's appointments, you know, for free, you know. Start cleaning up the neighbors. Like you said before, start getting the sweeping up the neighbors, cleaning up the neighbors, get together, start getting my money together in the law library. We spend these billions and billions of dollars on nonsense. You mean to tell me we can't put the money together in our own community to get our own bank, get our own supermarket, get our own hospital?
But we're in the middle, though, of a fierce political battle for, you said correctly, for control.
True.
Is there an opportunity here to leverage whatever power we have so that we can get something out of this process? Or should we just concede that it is not going to work for us and begin instead to devise ways in which we can fashion our own systems of self-control?
We have to devise a way to fashion our own systems of self-control. Because, listen, even if we say something's hard, we're getting to the point where we might have to try the impossible. because we can't. I mean, people are hungry now. People are starving now. People are homeless. You can't keep waiting. The 2020 election, okay, is what, 8 months away. People are starving and need help right now. So there's things that we can be doing right now. It may be small, but there's things that we can do right now. Okay, we buy liquor. I'm not what nobody does. Whatever you do, that's what. But I'm saying, if we can buy liquor, cigarettes, beer, marijuana, go to the club, we can take those same resources for a month or two together, put it together in a pot, and we can do something for ourselves in this way, and at the same time, still be aligned with what's going on politically also, but at the same time, we're doing things for ourselves, which can produce results. Even if it's a small, we have to start, let's solve a problem first. Like all these people that go to these schools, like you talk about Ben Chavis and them with this new news program, okay? Here it is, they're going with to try to be their intelligence, supposedly, to go to school and stuff. There's nothing wrong with that, but to solve other people's problems. How is that intelligent? It's not intelligent if I can solve other people's problems. Intelligent is when I can solve my problems, our problems, as black people. That's what's intelligent. Not if you can solve other people's problems, can't solve your own. There's nothing intelligent about that. Look at all these business administrative degrees that black people are supposed to have, Negroes are supposed to have. But yet and still, our community in our daily with other people controlling our businesses. So what good is those business BA degrees doing? If we don't have more BA degrees, less.
Could any of the candidates running, are any of them coming close to your idea of what politics should be, especially when the equation is people give their vote, they get something in return, they get service?
No, I'm going to tell you why. Now, I'm not speaking for the body, I'm speaking for myself. Because first of all, myself, I'm a politician, whatever who I'm representing. I'm going to be going into these neighborhoods by myself, knocking on doors, not with 100 bodyguards behind me, stuff like that, so I can be familiar with the people I'm supposed to be representing. These so-called politicians, okay, well, they come on TV, this, that, they live in these gated communities. They're not aligned with the people. They're outside of alignment of the people. So if I'm a politician, I'm a Malcolm Dole. Hey, Utrice, how you doing today? How's it going? You might say, come on and have breakfast. I'm sending this so-and-so. Okay, I'm coming to talk to you. How's the grandchildren? I'm going to familiarize myself with you. How can I represent you that I have no familiarity with you whatsoever? I'm just talking loud. Talking, I'm going to do this, that, I'm always going to do, going to do, going to, going to, going to do. We're always going to do, we're going to come out and do this, but nothing is being done to uplift these communities. And that's not doing us any good, whatever, because all the money and the power and the corporations, unfortunately, we sat around all these years bickering with each other, and we let these corporations get so much power, it's going to be hard to fight back. That's why it's so hard to fight back against it now. We sat around and allowed them to get all this power. They didn't have this kind of power before years ago. But now they've got, the power is just astronomical, and they can just buy people. They might not be able to buy me or you, but other people have prices. They'll come up and say, okay, well, we're representing the people. What's wrong with what they're doing? They're racist. We instantly taking checks from them. You see? So they've got all this power now, and I understand that, yeah, you put them in office. Well, it's like, okay, look at the black farmers that got their lawsuit 10 years ago. Do you know the majority of them have not got paid yet?
That's true.
So even if they give us reparations, my point, my issue is, okay, how are we going to make them pay? What if we say, okay, yeah, we see what was going on. Yes, y'all won the lawsuit. We're not giving you nothing. What are we prepared to do then? What if they say, what if they just say, I'm not giving you nothing? Yeah, we know what the law passed. Yeah, we're supposed to give you reparations. What are you going to do about it? This is what we have to start preparing ourselves for.
So in this time, right now, where this everybody's heads are into the election, for whatever, whatever we think about it, is there something you think could be done to leverage some kind of return of investment for the black community, the black and brown communities?
Well, I'm going to say this, Utrice, and it's going to sound harsh and it's going to sound up, but I'm not saying it's the only thing, but the most effective thing, unfortunately, that might be ugly, will be civil disobedience. I know it probably sounds crazy. I know they probably say, well, that's not okay, but that's because these people are shut. They have this power. They're telling us we're not doing any. All they're doing is cutting, and allocate more money to these super rich people. Jeff Bezos, for instance. didn't pay $11 billion in taxes. So when Trump cut it from 35 to 21, if he was supposed to pay his tax at $11 billion, that would be about at least $2 billion, okay? So that's $2 billion that he has in his pocket more because he didn't pay $11 billion worth of taxes he didn't have to pay. But also, as a result of that, he also received what's called a negative tax credit, a negative effective tax rate, which is zero minus, which means he got back $178 million for giving up, you know, incentives for his employees, stock options. And not only did he pocket $2.7 billion have to pay taxes, he got a negative effective tax rate. See, and I'm talking about, and these are the things that are important because these are the people that have the power. I mean, while we're sitting in here starving, you know, 16 million children going to bed hungry every year, we're sitting around, and I understand that, you know, but what are we, something has to be done. I mean, I know it might sound harsh, we might be afraid, but even if I'm afraid, I still have to have the courage to try to do something, even if I'm afraid, Idris. I could be afraid all day long.
Well,
that doesn't stop me from having the courage. Excuse me?
You got to do what you got to do. Thank you very much, Everlasting, for warning us again. Yet another voice. And we wonder whether people are listening.
Right.
And soon we will have no choice but to listen.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for contributing.
You're welcome. Thank you, Richard.
I really appreciate the call.
Okay.
Thank you. Right. Bye-bye. Okay. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
I'm listening to this discussion, and it's making me think that people don't understand that this was formed as a slave-holding republic from the start, and one of the key methods of continuing what we have being done by those who rule is the nature of white supremacy slavery. So if we are in this situation, we have the one political party broken up into two divisions. Both divisions control lock, stock, and barrel by the ruling class. To think that they're going to do the right thing to benefit all the people is ridiculous. That cannot be done. Racism is a fundamental building block in maintaining the rule of those who rule. So occasionally they will throw out the proverbial bone, but the way you control people to an extent that they will function against their own self-interests in this particular situation is white supremacy racism. So if you're looking for those who rule to throw out your bone, maybe they will do it now and then and say something now and then to sort of pacify you, they will do that. But as long as we have the situation where you only have one party and they've essentially eliminated the possibility of any viable party besides the two divisions, Republican and Democrat, it's just hard to see why you're going to think that anyone who runs for president of this republic is going to really make any significant change in terms of eliminating the one main building block of this republic. Racism and ignorance. So, you know,
taken, David,
I don't know what you want to do. If you want to fall in line with one of those two.
Okay, are you there?
Not going to work for eliminating the main building blocks of white supremacy, racism, and what happens in the United States of America.
Okay, all of that notwithstanding, what therefore is the political choice that any person of color in this country would make?
Well, you don't really have a choice. Whoever gets in there, whoever the ruling class gets in there, they're going to be on somewhat of a tight leash, because the real power here is the oligarchy that runs the country. So if you want to choose among those crooks, mostly crooks who are running for president, and you can choose just like choosing for the person who's going to be the warden at the penitentiary. Yeah, you got a little choice, one warden or the other. That's up to you. But I, in good conscience, cannot support that. I'm not going to vote for my real enemy, and I don't see anybody there that is going to really do what I would want. Now, among the people running, and the Republican and Democrat, I mean, there are people who are saying good things, some good things, like, Bernie and whatnot, about social benefit and whatnot. Those are good. But, if you want to pick and choose among those, I guess you can. And that's what you'd have to do. But I don't think anyone who has a viable program to end white supremacy racism, which is the main building block to control the people, in addition to the main thing, which is the ignorance you control with the media. And the ruling class controls all the media just about, maybe a fraction does not control, like PRN. But they control all the information that people get. They get, it is very difficult to see the ruling class, who is making off with huge amounts of wealth, give that up for having something like the real democracy, and not this phony representative democracy that does not represent the people anyway. It represents the ruling class. And if people haven't figured that out yet, they rarely have a problem. So, I could not suggest any of those candidates, because none of this is going to work to solve the real problem, which is capitalism, imperialism, which is directed towards making profit for those in charge and those who rule. And that's not going to change as long as we have this system and we have no rebellions. So the only way that people will really make a change is when they get to the point of, rebellion, and that's the only way. They're not going to change anything in Congress, because they don't control Congress. They think they control, but they don't control it. They don't control the courts, and they don't control the executive. So the people are kept up in what in education we call busy work. So you spend your time wondering about who's going to be the next warden, you see. So that's what we're in the state of right today. So the point is, it was mentioned earlier, the Stockholm syndrome. There's a lot of truth to that. You're standing there getting involved with your worst enemy and thinking that somehow that's in your interest to pick among these enemies that are running for a particular office. So I don't have much hope in any significant change in the things that need to be changed, like the distribution of wealth, the improvement of the social safety net for people, and doing what is necessary for the good of the masses of people, not the fraction of 1%.
Thank you. Thank you very much, David, for your very instructive opinion. Thanks so much. Leona from Michigan, you're on the air.
Greetings, Utrice, and greetings to you.
Hello.
Hi. Listen, I'm glad to be able to hear you on the radio. Glad you're still doing the shows. Glad I can hear you doing the shows. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
What did you have a specific question today? Forgive me. I got some things I wanted to add to the pot, to the soup, but was there a specific question or no?
Well, the question was that many in this presidential campaign, we're hearing a lot from candidates about their dedication and their deep concern about the African American and Latino communities in particular, but communities of color generally. And I was wondering, what could we point to as evidence of their concern?
Ah, okay. Okay. Well, at present, at present, I don't know if there's anything we can point to as evidence of their concern. And I don't know. Maybe there are some things, but at this moment in time, I don't know. Did you ever hear this saying? I heard this one guy say one time that these national elections or the whole electoral process in the United States is really a game of musical chairs that white supremacists play. Musical chairs, that game of eliminating, you know, involving players, chairs, music, whatever, one fewer chair than players, et cetera. But I'm beginning to think that analogy or metaphor, whatever, you know, is pretty much on point. This electoral thing is just a game of musical chairs that white supremacists play. Somebody said something about solving problems, and that's something that I've been trying to put more energy and attention to in my own, you know, sphere, my own world. There are four questions I try to ask myself on a regular. I hope I'm not getting off point, though, but I got this idea from the work of Neely Fuller, Jr. These four questions are, one, what do I want to do? Two, why do I want to do what I want to do? Three, how do I plan to do what I want to do? And four, what do I expect the constructive result to be? Sometimes when I ask myself those questions, it puts the brakes on a lot of nonsense that I might be, you know, about to participate in. I asked myself those four questions before I called into your show today. And one of the constructive results that I hoped might happen is that some people will be reminded of the work of Neely Fuller and his effort to produce a code for thought, speech, and action for those people who are victims of the system of racism, white supremacy. You know, I must
interrupt you a bit for the purpose, specific purpose of getting close to the an answer for the question raised. And I understand the work of Neely Fuller very well, but I want to hear from you personally your thoughts about the state of affairs that we are experiencing now. What is it, in your view, what is it? And is it doing anything for us? Is it to be believed? Is it to be trusted?
No, I think the state of affairs now is one of big transitions in a way. I think that there's a form of madness in the land. And,
you're absolutely right. That's absolutely true.
Yes. I don't know how to solve the problem, though, you know. I do think it's important to have a good, clear definition of the problem, a precise lock on what the problem is before one can develop the correct, effective solution.
Well, we're talking here strictly, in a sense, strictly about political solutions as mm-hmm. they present themselves during a presidential campaign. We come to terms with a lot of things that we set to the side for whatever reason, and now we are confronted with the question about how did we get here? Who is going to help us? Who is going to save us? That's what happens at this time in a political campaign. People begin to realize, most of them don't, but people do begin to realize that for all of the investment made over all these decades and decades, we still can't really point to a comprehensive advantage that we have gained. So what do we do? Do we change our attitude toward politics and the practice of politics? Do we make demands in a more concerted way? What do we do?
Well, I don't know the answer to that question, to be honest with you.
Me either. This is a terrible thing. But it starts, perhaps, with us talking.
Okay.
Talking out loud, including our fears, including our trepidation, but talking about it, giving voice to it. Let it be known that we are not going to be silenced into submission.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Okay.
That's what I think we have to do. We have to energize the community or re-energize the community all over again. It is frustrating to have to do something over and over and over again, but that's the nature of the work. We have to be patient. And we have to put our best foot forward, our best effort forward, because I'm sure you feel, even from the short time between this trial and now, there's an aggression coming from Donald Trump and the Republican Party generally. There's an aggression about restoring the order that they feel has been disturbed.
Mm-hmm.
And that means it's going to be hell to pay, because Trump already has set his sights on programs, you know, that sustain life.
Mm-hmm.
And this is embraced by the Republican Party because we know it's all where it's all stemming from. So I hope we're going to continue this conversation, by the way, just in case you may not get in today. We'll do it tomorrow as well, along with Free Your Mind Friday. We need to talk about this in the open, and we need to alert the powers that be that this is not something that we are going to suffer in silence. We're going to give voice to it. Thanks, Leona, for your call.
Yes, ma'am.
Appreciate you calling in and contributing. Henry from Chicago, you're bringing up the rear.
Oh, wow. Greetings, Yatrice, and greetings to all the PR and Lisa.
How about that?
Oh, wow. So I have to come after all of these great comments that came. I think everybody who called has put in very productive input. And the only thing that I can come up with is what Patricia said about these politicians pandering to black people. Because obviously none of these politicians are really, you know, caring. Matter of fact, I think they have more vitriol for black folks than anything. But obviously, what I see actually as a result of all this is a lower black voter turnout in this national election. Because I think black people are starting to realize that not all of them, but I think a lot of them are starting to realize that none of these politicians are serious about the plight of black people in this country. And I think what they're doing is what Patricia said again, pandering, is, you know, they'll do things for brown, you know, or Latino people in regards to immigration, but they would never do anything specifically for black people. Like, there is nothing in the books for specifically black people. And you notice too, the reparations conversation that they were having, you notice that kind of died down now. Like, none of the candidates talk about it anymore. So you basically can tell what they think about us, what they think about us as people. So I predict a lower voter turnout for this presidential election by black people.
But I have to challenge something here, Henry.
Mm-hmm.
Is it what they will do or won't do? Or is it more what we aren't doing?
I think it's a combination of both. I think we as black people look towards these politicians to do more than what they are forced to do. Because in politics, politicians won't do anything unless they are forced to do it. And we're not forcing them to do it. We're asking them. And in politics doesn't work that way. We don't ask politicians to do, we basically force them to do it. And if we don't force them to do it, then they're not going to do anything for us.
How pervasive do you see this being, the idea that we're not forcing our elected officials to do anything? So they take that as a cue that they don't have to do anything.
Oh, I mean, it's very pervasive. I mean, you see a lot of our black elected officials who, you know, who basically ask or basically plead, you know, for, you know, the higher level or the national government levels to, you know, give us money for schools, or we need this and we need that. Nobody is saying, if you don't do this for us, this is what we're going to do. You hardly ever hear that from anybody with some sort of spokesmanship for, you know, anybody in our, you know, in our particular circle of people, and particularly black people.
Well, we'll have to leave it here for today. That doesn't mean it won't continue. There's always tomorrow. So if you didn't get said what you needed to get said today, you might as well take advantage of the opportunity tomorrow. I thank you. I am just so impressed with the effort made to contribute meaningfully to a discussion so that people listening are learning and appreciating new things. And you do it so generously and fearlessly. I really appreciate that attitude. I thank you for contributing today, and let's get together again tomorrow. Bye-bye.